From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Being a teenager today is difficult enough. For many, shifting definitions of sexual orientation add layers of adolescent angst. A new YA novel from New York Times bestselling author Nick Stone follows how questions of gender and identity play out in the lives of three teens in a Decatur, Georgia high school. Nick Stone is based in Atlanta, and she is with us today, the release day for her new book, Odd One Out. Nick Stone, congratulations.
Thank you.
And welcome.
Good morning.
So, you know, so many of us want to forget what teenage life was like. What is it about the struggles of teens in America at this time that inspires you so much?
Honestly, I think it's the fact that they aren't that different from when I was a teenager. This particular book is kind of my love letter to my teenage self, who was struggling with these questions and didn't really feel like I had any place that I could talk about it openly. Thankfully, things have changed a good bit, and teens are more open and more okay with asking these questions out loud. But I definitely, I've interacted with a few that have read it already, and they're just over the moon that a book like this is going to exist, or that it does exist as of today.
So you're exploring this kind of murkiness, the raging hormones of teenage, what, like you said, we all went through that, right, as teens. But now sexual identity of three teens, how do you dig into that very particular confusion?
Honestly, I just pulled from experience. I think that as time has gone on from 2015, when, you know, it was federally passed that same-sex couples could get married, we've had kind of an awakening. And I read this article last year in Teen Vogue where like 40% of teenagers polled between 13 and 25, but 40% of people identified as not straight, you know? So this isn't something that's as rare as I think people assume it is. I think that a lot of people are questioning their attractions when they're in their adolescence, and these things are kind of coming to the fore.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because I think a number of YA novels are about being in the closet or about coming out. But you chose to explore this middle ground, this uncertainty about sexuality. What is it about that ambiguity that I think feeds certainly a lot of drama, but how do you play that out?
Well, honestly, I think that that might be the most important part. The part, you know, in adolescence, we're questioning so many things and trying to figure out our place in the world. And there are some excellent books about kids who are in the closet and trying to come out. Becky Albertalli's Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda comes to mind. I think she'll actually be on with Adam Silvera later today, and they have another book coming out. They have a book coming out today called What If It's Us that is that opposite end of the spectrum, where you have these two kids who aren't in the closet but are trying to figure out how to maneuver in the world. But that kind of gray area where kids are trying to figure out, like, am I same-sex attracted? Do I like boys or girls or both? Or, you know, am I attracted to people who don't fit in the gender binary? Like, these are questions that teens are asking, just like they're asking, like, what do I think about politics? What do I think about, how do I feel about this, that, or the other in the world? Like, this is another thing that just is kind of on the list, I think, of things that kids are trying to figure out when they're between, you know, 12 and 18.
Well, let's get a sense of this book in particular. The book follows three characters, Courtney, or Coop, as he's called, Jupiter, or Jupe, and Ray. They're all teenage people of color, all wrestling with these complicated feelings about themselves and about each other. I'd love for you to read a little bit. This is a dinner scene. Can you set it up for us? Tell us what's happening here.
Yeah, I will. So Coop is the one boy. It's one boy and two girls. Coop and Jupiter have been best friends since they were 6 years old, since they were in first grade. And Coop has always harbored these secret feelings for Jupiter, who is just very openly into girls and very openly not into boys. So it's kind of this idea of him wanting something that he knows he can't have. And it's fine up until this new girl moves to town. Her name is Ray. And she kind of throws them both into a bit of a tailspin. So the scene that I'll be reading from is Courtney's first and Coop's first encounter with Ray after knowing that Ray and Jupiter have been interacting without him really being a part of it. So this is from Courtney's perspective. "And you didn't tell me that this girl who obviously makes you so happy was coming to my house for dinner. What was there to tell?" And she pulls out of my grip and bounds after Ray with more spring in her step than I've ever seen. I get to the living room just as Mama finishes the introductions. It's dead obvious from the shock trapped in Dr. Chin's raised eyebrows after meeting Troy and Emilio that he got no forewarning about the non-traditional family next door. Which is fine, of course. I can just tell he doesn't know what to do with the information. We live in a pretty progressive area, as Mama likes to put it, and barring one incident in ninth grade involving some bigots picketing at one of my basketball games in deep South Georgia, the two-dad life has never really been a big deal. I'm so used to it not being a big deal, in fact, that Dr. Chin's shock catches me off guard. And now I'm really curious about Ray. It's crystal clear to me that Jupe was flirting with her, so Ray either didn't realize or didn't mind. Definitely seemed like there was something mutual going on, but it's not like Ray has "I like girls" tattooed on her forehead, so it's difficult to know for sure. What if Ray's batting for the same team as Jupe and Dr. Chin doesn't know it? If his daughter was gay and he knew, he probably wouldn't have been so shocked by the dad poppy revelation, right? But then again, he looked so happy about whatever was happening between the two girls. As a matter of fact, all five of us can see them sitting at the dining room table, giggling and touching each other's hair and examining each other's nails and complimenting each other's best features. I just heard Jupe say, "Dude, your eyes are amazing. They're like the inside of a just ripe avocado." Ray's reply, "Oh my gosh, yours are like tree sap backlit by sunlight." Again, Dr. Chin looks thrilled. Is this a normal thing for girls to do? Jupe says Brianna isn't her type. Is Ray? Which leads to other questions. How much have they been talking? Do they see each other outside of school? Did they hang out at all during my game plan hiatus? During dinner, I keep my mouth shut and my eyes on my plate to keep from staring at them. What the hell you plan to do if she gets a girlfriend, Coop? But then Mama has one mojito too many, Poppy made a freaking picture, and starts blabbing. So, Ray, you should know you're a lucky girl. Courtney and Jupiter are Decatur High royalty.
That is Nick Stone reading from her new book, Odd One Out, is on sale today. There's so many things going on inside of that scene. You've got, Coop watching Jupe, who's, you know, he's always had an admiration for. Now he suddenly understands this girl, Ray, who's in the picture. But at the same time, Jupiter has two male parents. And Ray's family is, you know, walking into this scene where, you know, mommy's making mojitos. There's so many things going inside this scene. And if you could map out the way that they're all looking at each other and their dynamics, I mean, do you do that? Do you have to map these kind of things out?
I mean, honestly, this stuff kind of plays out in my head like a movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's true for a lot of novelists. I really wanted to touch on the diversity of American life. You know, like, we have a very strict image, I think, of what the word family means and what it looks like. And with this book, not only am I exploring questions of sexuality and questions of identity, but I'm also just exploring kind of, I'm attempting to expand on the idea of family and like what family means. It's like you said, Jupiter has two dads. Courtney and Ray are both raised by single parents. Ray's dad is Chinese. Courtney's a black guy. So you have all of these kind of cultural things colliding. And I think it's a good thing, and it's something that people need to see more of.
But we also hear about the deep south of Georgia,
yeah.
where you're from. You're from Georgia, where people have strongly diverging views about sexual orientation, especially, maybe especially even for teens, I would say. Atlanta, maybe a hub for LGBTQ community, but strong conservative Christian tradition that is less accepting. So, was that a concern for you when you're writing this book, addressing teen audiences in the South?
It was, absolutely. And more from the perspective of, like, as a person who did grow up in a very conservative Christian household, but is openly bisexual, that was something that I really had to dig into. And I had to dig into, you know, at the end of the day, what's the most important thing? The fact that, you know, we're all telling each other how we should be, or that we have the space and the freedom to just love whoever we want to. You know, I think that that is the most important thing. And I really wrote this book for the kids who are kind of living in these bubble areas and don't have anybody to talk to and are struggling with these things and don't know what to do with it. I think that, you know, as a kid who that was my experience, I think that they are the ones who are going to benefit the most from reading the book. I mean, I think that anybody who does will get a deeper perspective on kind of LGBTQ issues and what questioning actually looks like, because I think there are a lot of preconceived notions about questioning and about, you know, what it means to be gay or what it means to be bi, or, you know, is it a decision? Is it an orientation? Like, there are all of these different kind of pieces of the puzzle that are addressed in the book. But I do think that the kids who really need it are the ones who are maybe trapped and are feeling these things and don't know what to do with them. I met a young lady, an eighth grader, in Nashville, Tennessee, a couple weeks ago. I did a session with her classroom, actually, about Dear Martin, about the first book that I wrote. And as she was leaving the media center, she hands me a note. And I opened this note and, like, immediately burst into tears because the note said, "Hi, I'm gay, but my parents are homophobic. But after talking to you, I know I'm going to keep pushing." Mm. And it just, like, those are the kids who I think are going to benefit the most from books like this one, from books like Adam and Becky's. There's so many excellent LGBTQ YA novels coming out.
Well, and you said this is a letter to your high school self.
Yeah.
Tell us about that for you. What was that transition like? What was that realization for you, realizing that you, woman of color, are bisexual? Especially because I think there are stigmas associated with being queer in every community, but it has a particular kind of flavor in the African-American community.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of that has to do with, like, Black church tradition,
right,
and also just racism and assimilation and those types of things. Like, you don't do anything that deviates from the norm, because if you deviate from the norm, it just puts you at an even more disadvantage when you're trying to kind of make your way towards success in this country. But, I mean, I had my first crush on a girl when I was 6 years old, you know? Like, I had a raging crush on my best friend in elementary school. And, you know, people, they hear that and they're like, oh, well, everybody likes their best friend. But, like, when you're six, you can tell the difference, you know? And I think that we have to do a better job of listening to even young kids when they are feeling these things and validating them in them, even from their youth. But I know moving through middle and high school, it was just like this thing that I knew I had to keep a secret. Not only because of, like, church and that type of thing, but also just because it just wasn't acceptable on the whole. So I'm glad now, though, to be kind of in a position where I can say, hey, look, I'm like this, and it's okay for you to be like this, too. Because representation matters. Like, kids need to see, especially kids of color, they need to see images of themselves out in the world, like, at large, and images of themselves thriving out in the world at large.
Did you have any models or mentors or anybody saying, like, it's okay, recognizing that in you when you were growing up?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so you've created them.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel that way about, like, writing in general, too. Like, I didn't have a lot of examples of African-American female writers who were writing stuff that I could relate to. So it's the same thing, you know? I think if you don't see yourself, you got to go out and be yourself so that other people will see you and decide that, okay, well, I can do that too.
Well, I remember when Crazy Rich Asians came out, right? They revived this whole conversation about how hard it is to market to the diverse, you know, diverse characters onto the screen. Is it similarly hard to get stories like this out into the world, people of color, and especially with LGBTQ characters? What are you saying?
Well, what's interesting is, like, it's honestly not that hard. We have these preconceived notions about what people are going to be interested in, and they're just wrong. I mean, as I think as evidence from, like, the success of Black Panther, the success of A Wrinkle in Time, the success of Crazy Rich Asians, the success already of The Hate U Give. You know, you have all of these images of people of color and people of color just surrounded by other people of color. And I think that because for so long, Hollywood has been so white that people, and white and straight even, like, people assume that there won't be a market for this stuff. But, like, clearly there is. And I just hope that it continues to expand. It continues to expand and people continue to push a little bit and continue to, like, try and get this representation out there so that we see more of, like, what America actually looks like.
Well, all of these are first person narrators in this book. And I think it's hard enough to get the language of a teenager. How did you get this very distinct voices for Coop and Jupe and Ray?
Editing.
No, but do you ever, like, walk around in high school and just listen to people?
Is absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm in high schools. I'm in a high school this afternoon. Like, I'm in high schools, like, 2 to 3 days a week at this point, talking about books, talking about writing and interacting with teenagers. And I've got mentees, and I also have this, like, this consultation board that I will text when I have a question about something that I'm too old to understand.
Oh, right. So you say, like, are the kids still saying this?
Oh, absolutely. I remember sending a text to a kid recently that was like, what do people your age call, like, a beat down car? Because, you know, we call them hoopties, but they don't call them that anymore.
What do they call them?
Now they're beaters.
Okay.
Or
good
buckets.
To know.
Bucket was the one that he gave me. You're driving around in your dad's bucket. So that was a good one. But yeah, I think like with the separate voices, they sounded a lot more similar in the first draft, of course, which just goes to show you it's important to edit your work. But also, like, I feel like there's method writing, just like there's method acting, where you like try to embody the character that you're writing and you write as if you are them. And that's it's not only helpful for the final work, it's also like really enlightening as a person who's writing people who are different from me in myriad ways. And it teaches me empathy. So hopefully when people read, they kind of embody the same empathy that I was feeling as I was writing.
So you actually voiced Jupe for the audiobook, is that right?
I did.
So what is that like to, you know, own this part of the self that was questioning, you know, when you're basically voicing yourself in high school on
literally
some level.
That,
how,
yeah.
What was that experience like?
I mean, it was a dream come true. Like Jupiter literally is me if I had been out in high school, because honestly, I am way more attracted to women than I am to men. And my husband is like the only exception. And if she, like, getting to read her and was basically like me getting to step into my fullest self. And it was literally a dream come true. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've actually had dreams where I'm getting to read an audiobook. And so reading my own was just like mind blowing.
Wow. So now you're on to a middle grade book next. And when you're a New York Times bestselling author, you get book deals and you've got a couple that are due to come out. So what about switching now to middle grade?
Yeah, so I have small children. I've got a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I'm like slowly aging my way down so that I'm creating books that they can actually read. But yeah, middle grade, I really wanted to move into middle grade, largely because there just aren't a lot of books for Black kids. So, you know, we're just moving it on down and going to keep it going.
Well, Nick Stone, congratulations. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Nick Stone's new book, Odd One Out, is out today. And that is it for our show today. On Second Thought is produced by Elena Rivera, Leighton Rowell, and LaRaven Taylor. Tyler Morris is our technical director, and Amy Kiley is our senior producer. Our theme song is by Alex Crispin and Marshall Ruffin. I am Virginia Prescott. I'm so grateful for you spending some time with us today. This is On Second Thought. See you tomorrow.